You're listening to the Best of the Morning Show podcast. Today's best segments from all 3 hours rolled into one.
Tennessee baseball broke out the brooms 2 weekends in a row. At home, Tennessee has been able to finish the sweep. You got a top five series win sandwiched in between. Tennessee taking care of business in the SEC. Missouri, was pretty up to the challenge, I would say. You know, you thought after game one, getting kind of knocked around a little bit as they got into their bullpen and started burning pitching arms. You're like, oh, man, it's going to be a long weekend for Missouri when it comes to pitching. Expect Tennessee to score a bunch of runs. And then that didn't really bore out. Tennessee's offense wasn't very crisp this weekend. But Tennessee's pitching, Bob, led by our boy Kirby Connell, able to close the door on Missouri.
Yeah, went from a offensive explosion Thursday night to becoming a pitching team in games 2 and 3. Each time I joined the games, I was like looking at the scores going, man, what's going on here? But then looking at the lines, you know, I mean, Drew Beam, very solid Friday night. Kirby got the hold, Combs one out save, and then Saturday, man, the bullpen thrived. Kirby's getting a ton of run. And he had that – he got the third out on a swinging – was it a swinging strike, Sam? Did you watch the end of it?
I didn't see that one
there. I think it was. Maybe it was a called strike. Either way, man, it was just great seeing Kirby just go nuts afterwards, you know, turned around, faced the outfield, you know.
I saw the highlight.
Yeah, it was great.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that it was and it gives me a lot of optimism because, to your point, John, Missouri showed up even after getting blasted in the first game. They hung in there, and you just got to keep winning and advancing. And these are the types of games that you would worry maybe other teams would stumble. But these guys, our guys, they took care of it, just found a way to win.
Is that – would that be, what, 9 of 11? I believe, in SEC play. If you go back to the Auburn series, you won the last two there, swept LSU, swept Missouri, took 2 out of 3 against Kentucky. It was a sweep that you really needed. It was a sweep that was expected, right? You know, if you looked at the Missouri game and you played the game of, how many do we need to take here? Everyone would have came back and said, you need three. And now Tennessee finds themselves at, 15-6 in conference? And yep, just one game behind Kentucky in the SEC East, but also just one game behind Arkansas and tied with Texas A&M when you're looking at just the overall conference championship. Got to be honest, that didn't feel likely a couple weeks ago. Felt like Arkansas, I don't want to say was going to run away with it, but that Arkansas was in pretty good position, that you really had some work when it came to Kentucky. You knew their schedule was going to be tough. But just between those two schools and A&M, you thought, you're not really going to have a chance unless you just went out. Now all of a sudden you look, you're just one game back. That's pretty exciting. When the new polls come out, I expect Tennessee to be right there in the top three. Should they go up any bits?
No, probably not.
Like A&M lost this weekend once. Arkansas lost this weekend, but against, you know, quality opponents.
Yeah, Florida and Georgia probably isn't going to drop you.
No. How about that Arkansas? No, I'm sorry. Texas A&M game against Georgia.
Yeah.
Georgia goes up 9-0 in the first inning and then gets run ruled ultimately.
Wind was blowing out like 35 miles an hour at that park. It was just anything was going out.
Let's correct me if I'm wrong, but that was a doubleheader, right? So I gave them a little credit for turnaround, and I think they bounced back and won the second game, right? Is that how that worked? Was it a doubleheader?
Yeah, A&M won that series 2-1. Yeah.
Right. But Georgia bounced back after getting run ruled, after being up 9-0. They bounced back and won the
– I believe so.
The final game.
I think it was a doubleheader, yeah.
Yeah.
Like a really low-scoring game after that blowout.
Yeah, after getting run ruled, after getting up 9-0, I think I would have had a hard time getting up for game three. But but they did. I'll give them at least credit for salvaging one because, yeah, you come out, you score 9 runs to start a game. You're like, oh, man, here we go. Offense is rolling. And then I think it was either 8 or 9 runs in the bottom half of the inning that A&M responded with. Yeah. And then took over shortly after that. South Carolina, Kentucky was pretty fun. At least in game one, you had South Carolina, I think it a couple home runs in the ninth to tie that game, and eventually went on and won it in extras. Some good baseball in the SEC. So Tennessee didn't have a quality opponent. They played one of the worst teams in the conference. But they took care of business, and that's really what matters. Anything individually from any of Tennessee games stand out to you, Sam, in particular? Anything we need to take note of?
I think it was just nice to see, you know, maybe in a weekend where you didn't exactly have your best stuff from kind of your main guys there with, you know, I don't think you had the best weekend from Blake Burke and Billy Amick. And, you know, I just think up and down that lineup, you didn't necessarily have the greatest weekend with the bats. And I think, you know, it's always been everyone's biggest knock on Tennessee is, you know, they can only really score runs hitting the home run ball. And you know, I think that's it's obviously been their main way of getting runs this year so far. And you've been doing a lot of that. And so this has kind of been that first series, I thought, where the home run ball wasn't exactly flying. You know, the park was playing a little bit longer than it normally does this weekend. And I thought you did a great job of, you know, of kind of weathering that storm and grinding out some tough games against an opponent that you were probably expecting to kind of push around a little bit here. And so I think it's nice to, you know you're going to get everyone's best shot from anybody in the SEC when you're up there at the top. So I think to be able to have that response when you didn't exactly have your best stuff was huge moving forward.
Yeah, on Saturday you scored 3 small ball runs in the first inning, and then that was it.
Yeah, nothing after that.
That was it. And I can't even say there were no, like, pressure moments, because there's a couple innings where it looked like, okay, you need a couple insurance runs here, and Tennessee couldn't manufacture them. And, yeah, that's a little alarming, but I'll need to see it a couple more series before I start actually, like, worrying about it, right? For now, I'm just looking at this as a one-off. Hey, you're going up against an overmatched team. It's a trap series, if you will. You know, you always hear about trap games. You don't really hear about trap series in baseball, but, like, you took care of business on Thursday against Missouri. You knew that you were better than them. You played like you were maybe lacking a little focus, which I think those are the best type of wins whenever the wins feel like losses. So, like, you come out with a sweep. You come out, you know, keeping the win streak going, rising in the standings. But Tony V can really lay into the boys, get them refocused, have them hungry when they come out, you know, this week as we're getting, like – down the stretch in terms of chasing a conference championship.
Yeah, I was a little surprised. I was getting excited. It was late in that Saturday game, had the bases loaded, and we had Simo up, followed by Burke, and got nothing. That was, you know, it was a little disappointing because I thought, okay, we'll get some you know, distance here, some space, but didn't happen. But to your point, it's something for them to build on, and again, winning, like I said earlier, winning in different ways, it's important.
865-288-3131 if you want to weigh in. Let's get our week started. Polish Joe, top of the morning to you.
Hello, gentlemen.
Morning.
Hello.
How you doing?
Solid. How are you?
I'm doing great, man. I've just got off 4-night shift, and I'm at the airport at Tyson McGee. And I'm going to see my 82-year-old father for 4 days.
Good for you.
I can't wait, man. I mean, this guy coached me since I was in third grade until high school. But did you guys hear? So where I work, I can't have the phones on me at all. So on my way in my Uber driver, on the way to the airport, I put my headphones on and I'm listening to Inside the NBA trying to figure out what happened. And Charles Barkley made a rant last night on Inside the NBA that will go down in history. It started with Galveston in Texas. Have you guys heard it?
I know he's been going after Galveston, Texas, in relation to how some of these teams don't deserve to go to Cancun. Because that's been the joke running for 25 years is that these teams, when they're ready to pack it in, one, two, three, Cancun, they're going fishing, they're going all those places. But he said some of these teams are so sorry they don't deserve to go to Cancun, they're going to Galveston. Which then led to Beyonce's mother, who is from Galveston, coming out and trying to defend the city, to which Charles Barkley, of course, doubled and tripled down.
So it started with Galveston, and then Shaq is laughing uncontrollably, and then Shaq, you know, gets him going. And then next, you know, Charles goes from Galveston to San Antonio. And you remember
Chuck, what'd you say? Are they going to Galveston, Chuck? Chuck, is that what you said? Galveston?
he went from Galveston, and Charles, Jack just led him on. And next you know, Charles started with Galveston water. And then Shaq got him going, and Kenny and Ernie had their hands in their face, okay? And next thing goes to San Antonio, and then Shaq is dying laughing. He can't even sit in his seat. And Charles starts talking about bloomers and Victoria's Secret. And Victoria is always a secret in San Antonio, and churros. It was unbelievable, man. It was unbelievable. If you look it up right now, I haven't been able to look it up.
Post, Joe, I can't get people to look it up right now. We're doing a radio show. They need to be listening to us. Appreciate the phone call. Hope you have a good trip to see your pops. You can't be sitting in our audience to go listen to something else. I gave you the rundown. Shaq laughed. He said, Chuck, what'd you say? The big women in San Antonio, Chuck. Galveston.
I will say it does tickle me to watch Shaq just laugh hard. He was like banging on the desk, and I mean, he just can't handle it whenever Chuck gets on a rant.
That's all he has to do is just laugh and ask Chuck to repeat himself.
Exactly.
Oh, God. It's a classic recipe. So, Bob, what did Beyonce's mother, what has she said back?
I just think she got on social media and did, you know how they do on
read the tweets,
yeah,
right?
They read the tweets coming in from a commercial or going to a commercial, and it was something about you know don't sleep on Galveston, etc., you know, Mrs. Knowles. And so, you know, then they were, of course, Kenny and Shaq are giving Charles all sorts of grief, you know, about that. So that was it, basically. I mean, it's it was funny. It really was. I mean, it was vintage Charles for sure. But that was really it. I mean, it wasn't like anything highly controversial. It was just like a great, you know, great one for the Charles Barkley greatest hits. My favorite is still the one when he talked a few years back about getting a bracelet from a friend in a steam room. Did you ever hear that one?
Yeah.
I mean, that one's the all-timer, man. It's like the creepiest thing I've ever heard, but it was like a guy he didn't even know.
If I was doing my Barkley's greatest hits, when he was on the teleprompter and they got him to read, "I'm a dumbass," that one's pretty good.
Yeah.
Whenever he's trying to promote, I believe it'd be the Hornets versus Suns, and he said, "I got two words for you, Chris Paul and Steve Nash." And they're like, "That's not two words, Chuck." "Nash and Paul." "No, that's still not two words, Chuck."
He did one last week that was, I'm surprised he's not getting paid by Manjaro. He was talking about, you know, he was calling Shaq a fat ass, and Shaq goes, "Well, you are too, except you're using that Manjaro or whatever." And so then Kenny looks at Charles. He goes, "What are you talking about?" And he goes, "Well, I'm using a drug."
You got the diabetes medicine?
Yeah. Kenny just like, too. Yeah, it was great, man. It was so funny.
You got the beatus? Sam, did you not tell Polis Joe we're talking Tennessee baseball here?
I did.
How did he make it through my gatekeeper over there?
We
even left him on hold for 10 minutes so he could see the conversation we're having. He said, "Hey, I want to talk about Charles Barkley." He called. I said, "Sam, ask what he wants to talk about." "Well, he wants to talk about Charles Barkley." I said, "Well, tell him we're about to talk about Tennessee baseball." "Oh, I'd love to talk about Tennessee baseball." "Well, where the hell was that at, Polis Joe?"
We let him there. He just didn't.
It's a Monday morning. Supposed to be our biggest local story coming out of it. We give him a kind of a nudge. Bob wants to get to him right at the beginning of the segment. He's like, "Well, we can't do that. Let's ease into it. Let's do our conversation. Then we'll get him there." We do that, and he just completely, I'll gives us a story. And it's nice you're going on a trip to go see your pops. You know, that's good. thank you for you know, listening after your night of work. I appreciate it. But we wanted to talk Tennessee baseball there. And we even told you. And then led you there. But you know what they say, Sam? You can lead a caller to a topic, but you can't make them speak, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Age-old quote.
Many people have said that throughout you know, the history of the world. I got another Tennessee baseball thoughts, though. I mean, I guess the Missouri series was pretty boring.
Yeah, it's just...
They rocked some horrible uniforms on Saturday. Uh-huh.
Missouri's not a team that's fun to look at, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Every time we play Missouri in something, I just get annoyed. They shouldn't be in the SEC. All these years later, I still haven't embraced them. I don't want them here. They really bring nothing to the conference.
I think we should make a conference that just puts all the teams together that it's just gray wherever they're at. Like, I think Missouri and Kentucky are two places where the sun never shines. We need just a conference that's full of those kind of depressing states and colleges a little bit.
Well, who else is in the conference? Because so far you just got two teams. I don't know if that's enough for a full conference. Maybe we just start with a rivalry. We make that a rivalry, Kentucky versus Missouri.
That's the only SEC opponent they can play.
Okay.
I'll come up with some more great
Northwestern
great places. Yeah, that's a good one.
Feels like it's always gray there.
Oh, so we're just
West Virginia. I don't think
so. We're just jumping conferences. It's not just SEC.
Yeah. No, it's poaching all of them.
Oh, then you know half the Big Ten teams would fall into that category.
Yeah, we'll take like the bad Big Ten teams.
Yeah.
See, now I think you're just taking bad programs that are kind of boring and more so than weather, because I feel like it's sun.
The gray conference.
I would feel like the sun shines in West Virginia a lot. But their program feels like a great program, but the actual weather inside the city, maybe not. Maybe there's, you know, just smog coming out of the coal mines, maybe. I don't know exactly how close their campus are, you know, is to coal mines. I don't know.
I'll workshop it.
Now I just think you're talking about mid-teams, because Kentucky and Missouri, mid, West Virginia, mid. Tennessee baseball heads down to Gainesville this weekend to take on Florida. As we look ahead early, it's a Thursday to Saturday series. 2 out of 3, the goal down there? Go down there and win the series?
Yeah, I think definitely the goal is to go down there and win the series. But, yeah, I mean, that's going to be a desperate Florida team. They're fighting for their life kind of right now here, and coming down the stretch, and they need all the wins that they can get. And so especially for them, you know, losing a series at home will definitely hurt. So I think that's going to be a Florida team that's playing desperate. You got to go down there and, you know, and give them your best shot and everything like that. But I definitely think a series win is what you're looking for.
Heading into the weekends or heading into last weekend, I saw where Florida's still projected in the fields, which seems crazy. They're only a couple games. They were only a couple games over 500. Now they're only one game over 500. 9-12 in conference. So, like, it seems like, yeah, their backs should be up against the wall. Would they get in the tournament if they finish the season just, like, four games over 500? Like, is that enough in the SEC to actually, like, still get in the field?
Probably. They'll probably get in as, like, one of the worst 3 or 4 seeds.
That seems
probably
crazy.
Three, but, like, just because those fours are normally those kind of, like, mid-major programs a little bit.
It's one of those teams that you'd be mad at if you're hosting the regional, though, and they show up. You're just like, really? Because, I mean, they got top-end talent. They just haven't put it together.
They'll get a tough draw, though. I don't think the committee will be nice to them.
Yeah, but, I mean, I don't remember how their draw was, but I know a couple years ago, like, wasn't Ole Miss the last team in the tournament the year they won it all?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, it feels to me like they shouldn't even be in, but I don't, you know, obviously know bracketology and seeding when it comes to the baseball tournament. I haven't seen any updated ones after the weekend after they lost 2 out of 3, so maybe they have fallen on the wrong side. But point remains either way as we head to the final 3 series of the season. Florida firmly on the bubble. Tennessee chasing a championship. Hopefully that means Tennessee can go down there and take care of business. But you are playing a wounded animal. I'm glad that we're only one game back now. You know, it's nice to actually have a carrot to chase versus just like wins and seeding. Like, it is nice to actually be in the mix for a conference championship. That's something that I didn't really anticipate. Now you're getting ready to play back-to-back road series at Florida and at Vanderbilt. Both good programs, but I think both of those weekend series seem a lot less daunting than they did maybe a month ago, especially in Vanderbilt's case. You know, Vanderbilt's not had a really good last month. Florida's been the same team all year. They've just been inconsistent.
Yeah. You never know what you're getting out of Florida.
But Vandy, like, it feels like a winnable series, one that you should go in there and expect to win.
Especially with the history that you've had recently with Vandy.
Right. Yeah. Any final Tennessee baseball thoughts, Bob?
Is this the last season? Are they doing away with divisions in all sports for SEC once Texas and Oklahoma come? I know, obviously.
Pretty sure.
This is the last time they'll be playing in that kind of format for baseball, too. There's some nice separation now. They're going to be in the top four. And to your point, John, it's pretty amazing just in 2 weeks' time. I mean, Kentucky's had a little regression to the mean. They're, you know, maybe coming back down to earth a little bit. I like Tennessee's chance to get the conference here. I really do.
They have the numbers up on the wall in the outfield of Eastern Division championships. I know that's something that most baseball fans say don't actually matter. You don't really celebrate, but it does look like something that you can attain and maybe add a number out there to the wall if you want to. But the overall conference title, yeah, only one game back. I haven't looked at the schedules, you know, down the stretch. We can do that throughout the week as we get set and kind of see what Arkansas has. We know Kentucky's got it really tough.
Yeah.
Florida's got it really tough. You got a 4-game lead on Vanderbilt right now, so you got a little bit of house money there. Hopefully you still have a nice little comfortable lead. If you're able to take 2 out of 3 from Florida this weekend, you'll have a nice comfortable lead going into the Vandy series. I don't really know what Arkansas and A&M have, but we'll look at that next couple days. Some Tennessee news on the way out. Candace Parker, one of my top Vols, you know, on our 37 Club mailbag, we were asked to rank our top 5 Vols of all time. She made my list. I've always had a soft spot for her. Helped that she, you know, was a back-to-back champion. Helps that I've always had a little crush on her. But she's also just been such an ambassador for Tennessee. I think that she puts on for Tennessee only behind Peyton Manning in terms of our big-time Vols that rep the school. I think Candace, synonymous with the school, kind of the living embodiment of the Pat Summitt era. I think, you know, of course, Pat no longer with us, but when you see Candace Parker, you still kind of see her. She still kind of carries that legacy with her wherever she goes.
Yeah, I'd say most influential Lady Vol athlete ever, right? I mean, you could argue as far as performance, you know there's obviously been some other great Lady Vols. She's right up there with them, you know, Holtzclaw and Catchings and others. But as far as her influence beyond the court and what she's done for ladies basketball and then other things, she was very very vocal and very active in the Title IX discussion as well. I mean, she definitely she's used her platform in such a positive way, and she's got such a great future ahead of her already. She's an elite broadcaster. Supposedly is going to get into some other business interests. She's one of one, man. She's pretty impressive.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think you have to give her credit for just being the most influential, but also just the best Lady Vol athlete. I mean, when you look at the Olympic gold medals, the MVP in the WNBA, and I know the WNBA, we're not going to judge it the same as other professional leagues, but she won 3 championships there.
Yep.
This one got carried to this last year. I mean, she was out with injury, so if you don't want to count that one, that's fine. She 2 championships as a player, a 3rd one on the shelf, Rookie of the Year, MVP in the same year, 2-time national champion. Like I said, I think there was 2 gold medals there as well with the Olympics. And then the life after playing career is going to go pretty well, too, I would imagine. Like, she's established now as an NBA voice, so, like, I don't think she's going anywhere. They gave her, you know, speaking of Charles and Ernie and them, they gave her a really nice tribute of sorts. They didn't run, like, any special montage, but they all talked about how much they loved Candace and how great she was and how much they cared for. I thought that was a nice touch.
Yeah.
Ernie, Shaq, Charles, Kenny all had really good things to say about her.
She's a pro. I mean, I remember just during this NCAA tournament, she was identifying some stuff, previewing the Tennessee-Creighton game. Jay Wright's sitting to her left, and Jay just says, you know what, I didn't even think of that. That's a really great observation. You know, I mean, there you go, one of the greatest men's college coaches out there, you know, just showing his respect for her knowledge of the game and her ability to convey it on TV too. She's just amazing. Total pro.
And she loves her Vols. And she tells everybody she loves her Vols pretty much every chance she gets. You know, I think Peyton, her, the new generation, I think both Grant and Josh Dobbs, you know, doing their part. But no disrespect to those guys. It's a little bit different when you have people like in GOAT conversation doing it. It's nice that Dobbs and Grant put on for the Vols, but it always kind of hit different when it was Peyton, you know, MVP, Super Bowl winning quarterback, one of the greatest of all time doing it, and of course, Candace carrying that same mantle. Happy retirement to a legend.
Yes.
Sam, send us to break. It's the morning show on Fan Run Radio. Let's do a little RTI read and react as we talk about the happenings in Tennessee athletics. Ryan Shumpert, Rocky Top Insider. Ryan, top of the morning to you.
Good morning, yo. Glad to be on.
Ryan, how you feeling after the Preds blowing game four in heartbreaking fashion?
Well, I am very much a bandwagon Predators fan. Me and a couple friends joked at the season opener was last Sunday when they played game one, so I can't say I'm overly distraught about it, but it did seem like from the little that I do follow, it did seem like a very Predators way to lose.
You had me fooled this whole time. I think I thought you were a big Preds fan. I'm sorry. You had me fooled. The bandwagon stuff, I guess I thought you were a real fan.
Yeah, no, I'm actually a little surprised it got you because I don't feel like I even really tweet about them. I'm also, you know, I'm on this. You're a real fan, but I'm a bandwagon Hawks fan, and I like the NBA more than I like the NHL, so I'll tweet about the Hawks some. I feel like I never really tweet about the Preds, so I'm impressed with my abilities to trick you on that one.
Okay, let's do some NBA then. What's your big takeaways from the weekend?
Oh man, that's a good question. I mean, I think what just surprises me the most is just Minnesota. The way they've just dominated the Suns. I mean, I probably would have picked them to win that series, but just for them to just completely have blown past them has been pretty surprising to me. Other than that, I feel like most everything that's happened here in the first round has been, you know, not overly surprising at least.
Yeah, Anthony Edwards, big-time superstar performance coming out of the weekend. A weekend that had Tennessee sweeping Missouri and moving to only one game back in the SEC standings. What was your big takeaway from Tennessee's baseball weekend?
I think it's probably just, again, that they won with pitching. And they did it a couple times in that LSU series 2 weeks ago. And it just feels like they're continuing to have a better ability to piece things together over the course of a three-game series. It just feels like they have enough arms. And I might have said it on here last weekend. To me, the question with the pitching has much more become, you know, I feel like earlier in the season it was, all right, do they have enough pitching that they can get back to Omaha? To me, I think they do. To me, the question has now become, is their top-level pitching good enough to win a national championship? So Tennessee continues to kind of change that discussion and change the questions around its pitching staff right now. And Aaron Combs, another solid weekend. Again, I keep on saying A.J. Causey's a starter, but A.J. Causey bounces back. All the starters did their job, did what Tennessee would expect out of them, and Tennessee was able to win two games over the weekend where they just scored three runs at home, which I feel like, I haven't fact-checked this, but I feel like Tennessee hasn't scored three runs or less at home more than, you know, two or three times all season outside of this weekend.
Hey, Ryan, good morning. Jumping to basketball for a second, we got news yesterday that Cade Tyson – as I said on X, now we know, you know, there's been so much uncertainty on where he was going to end up. Thought it was going to be Carolina, then he didn't commit after his visit, and Tennessee thought maybe, you know, the fans at least thought maybe Tennessee would still be in the mix. He commits to North Carolina yesterday, so now we know that, can kind of focus on hopefully these other guys coming in. And I'm also hearing some buzz about some other, like, I'm using air quotes here, unnamed players that they're setting up visits with, unnamed to us, but, you know, obviously they must be real. But As we wind down to the beginning of May, do you think we learn more this week at this point? We get some, you know, solidified movement when it comes to, well, at least Igor. I know with Lanier, it still may be a little bit of time, but any thoughts on that situation?
Kind of what you said. I think I expect something from Igor Milicic this week. I think kind of what was somewhat similar with the Cade Tyson deal. I think, you know, some NIL stuff, getting all of that hashed out, and obviously there's an extra component of that with Milicic being a European player. I know there's some extra T's to cross and I's to dot with all that. So I think we'll see something with that on this week. And like you said, I'm not expecting anything too soon from Chaz Lanier. You know, if that rule hadn't changed, I think it was last week when that became official, that grad transfer still had to be in by the end of April. I think if that rule hadn't changed, I don't think he would have gotten into portal to this point. I think he still is just focused on the NBA draft at this point. And then I think some of the high school names, or maybe the lower level portal names that Tennessee is going to try to bring in or wants to bring in, maybe for more of a project type thing. I think that'll be what's interesting. If we get more details on that this weekend, there's some more concrete movement on that, I would say, is what to me feels more up in the air right now, and what I'll be looking for more this week.
Talking with Rocky Top Insiders, Ryan Shumpert. Ryan, I'm a percentages man, so I'm going to give you a name. You give me a percentage of their chances of ending up at Tennessee. Let's just go with Chaz Lanier. You know, I know he's going to do the NBA stuff, test the waters, get some feedback. What percentage chance do you give him of ending up in Knoxville?
75%, 80%. I just feel skeptical that he's going to go to the NBA. And if he does decide to transfer, I think Tennessee's in the best spot right now.
Igor.
90-95. I mean, that one would be a big surprise, I think, if Tennessee doesn't end up getting it done. And you never say never with the portal. Obviously, all this stuff changes pretty quickly, but that's where I'd put that number at.
Have there been any other big names start surfacing yet for any of the final spots, or are we just going to kind of look at those two in terms of potential rotation players, and then everyone else, like you said, would be a high school guy you're taking a flyer on, or someone else in the portal you'd be taking a flyer on?
I mean, there's been a couple names that have been out there, and I'm blanking on the high school big man who's a real project guy. Again, I'm blanking on his name.
You can worry about him if he gets here. Yeah, you ain't got to know every prospect that Tennessee's linked to. The high school prospect, go ahead.
Yeah, so him, I mean, that's been the one name you've seen kind of consistently. But other than that, I just don't see, you know, if they are able to get Milicic and they are able to land Lanier, I just don't see a whole lot of needs on the roster from who's going to want to come in and how you're selling playing time. I mean, if you bring both those guys in, I think you have a roster that goes at least 9 deep, and that's before, you know, Cade Phillips, who's obviously back for another year, and Bishop Boswell, an incoming freshman who was a 4-star. You know, two guys I think in their heads, I'm sure, fully are expecting to compete for playing time. So that's the thing with filling out a roster and having 13 guys. You don't play 13 guys in basketball. So I think if Tennessee can get to the finish line with Milicic and Lanier, which obviously could take a little bit longer than Milicic, I think it's a lot about adding some flyers and some guys that are going to be okay coming in and maybe not playing next season, and you hope to develop and turn into players over the next couple seasons.
Now, if you land both of those guys, where does that put Tennessee in the preseason rankings, and where does that put Tennessee in terms of your expectations for the 24-25 season, while knowing that you skew a little bit more negative/realistic than most?
I think that's a top 10 roster. I think that's a team that's going to be just like the last two or three have been, in the top 25 all season and in the top 10 for a lot of the year, and has a great chance to make it back to the second weekend of the tournament. And I think how a guy like Chaz Lanier can translate to the SEC, and how can he keep being an elite level scorer, how much better can Felix Okpara get? And obviously it's just his first year in Tennessee's program, but it's his third year in a college program, which is obviously a year a lot of times you see big jumps from guys. So I think you look at those, Lanier probably being the big one, because scoring will, again, I think, be having a high-level scorer will be the question, and just how all these guys mesh. I think you, if all that works out the way Tennessee envisions and Tennessee hopes, I think Tennessee will have a chance to make another run and be in the thick of things to make their first Final Four like they were this past year.
Dovetailing off of that, Ryan, we were talking about this, I think, on Friday, and that was some statistics that we had received in terms of this prior season or this past season's performance when it comes to three-point shooting percentage and rim percentage for the guys that the guys we know that are coming in, which are D-Stone and Felix Okpara, but then also with the presumption that Milicic and Lanier would be coming. And they're very, very high. They skew much higher than the core of players that Tennessee had that are leaving after this season, you know, with Dalton and, you know, Josiah Santee, et cetera, and the boys transferring out. And one of the things that struck us, too, because if you looked at it cumulatively in terms of mid-range jumpers over the course of a season, the Tennessee number was considerably higher, because we know part of that was Dalton's game. It was considerably higher than the combination of these new players that would be coming on board. All of that to say that it feels like a bit more of an Alabama-centric attack, but with better defense, right? I mean, it's threes and short range. And I guess my question for you in this, because you spend time with availabilities with the assistants and with Rick and others, it just makes me wonder if there's, if we talk about the longevity of Rick Barnes as a coach and how much longer does he want to do this, but maybe we're seeing this major adjustment that's happening with, we're seeing it across college basketball. I just was curious about your thoughts tied to that.
Well, I think it goes back to a conversation we had, you know, right after the season ended. We were talking about Rick, and it just feels like he's very flexible right now, and he's adapting to a lot of stuff. And I think the mid-range stuff's kind of has been kind of a slow burn, really. I mean, I feel like they've shot a lot less over the last few years. I mean, Dalton put those numbers up some this year since he was just such a high-usage player, and he was good in the mid-range. But even then, compared to, you know, the Grand Admiral teams, way less mid-range shooting, and I don't think it's ever going to be something Rick completely gets away from. I don't think it's ever going to be. He's never going to look at the mid-range jumper like Nate Oates looks like the mid-range jumper. He'll continue to tell you now that the mid-range jump shot's a valuable shot, but the type of players they recruit, the type of way they play, they certainly put less of a value on it. And I think the number one, when you look at what Tennessee has targeted in the portal and what they've added in the portal, I think it's pretty clear the number one emphasis is shooting. I mean, every single player besides Okpara, who's obviously a different beast in what they're trying to get, shooting is, you know, 1A or 1B on their biggest strength. And a lot of those guys, obviously Darlin Stone, Dubar, and Milicic, and Kay Tyson, too, they didn't land. It was almost exclusively three-point shooting, like you said, not a ton of usage in the mid-range. Lanier would be the one who does get to the mid-range a little bit more, probably just from the fact that he handles the ball a lot more and is in a lot more pick-and-roll situations. But clearly a huge emphasis on shooting, and I think just a less mid-range shooting as a whole we've seen over the last few years. And I think as the players Tennessee recruits, losing Josiah was obviously another guy that had a pretty solid mid-range game, that they liked it when he shot in the mid-range. When they get away from that more, you're going to kind of just continue to see a slow burn of Tennessee not taking that shot as much as they have in the past.
All right, switching gears to the NFL draft. Just finished up on Saturday. Jalen Wright to the Dolphins, Kamal Haddon to the Chiefs, Joe Milton to the Patriots. Any of those stand out to you in terms of fits and production? Of course, Jalen Wright probably going to be the one that gets the most touches. Kamal Haddon going to be able to maybe have some playing time there, and Joe Milton's going to be kind of starting from scratch and maybe trying to stick as a quarterback, maybe just trying to find a spot on the roster. Did either of those locations and players stick out to you?
I think it's hard not to be excited about the thing about the possibility of Jalen Wright and that Mike McDaniel's offense and down in Miami. And, you know, I feel like maybe I'm off on this, but it feels like both those running backs were a little bit injury prone last year, so it feels like he's going to get opportunities, and it feels like an offense that's built pretty well to his strength. And I mean, that was the thing that you know, I don't necessarily think about fit as much with a player on the defensive side of the ball, but the Chiefs obviously lost their top two corners, you know, in free agency, and then obviously the trade with the Titans this offseason. So you would think, I'm sure they're not banking on him to be a starter by any means, but you would think there'd be some opportunity there. And with Joe Milton, I mean, we were talking about it up in the Lindsey Nelson's stadium press box on Thursday. It felt like, you know, maybe his best chance to stick around somewhere in the short term was to get up in the AFC East and be a scout team quarterback for Josh Allen. Just was kind of the build and the arm strength there. So that one made sense. Obviously, I don't think Jerod Mayo being a Tennessee guy is going to be any huge favor to Joe Milton in the long term, but it also probably doesn't hurt him either. So I thought pretty solid landing spots for all three of those guys.
You know, Ryan, obviously not the strongest draft class, I would say, for us. But, you know, you get a lot of those guys that sign some undrafted deals, and you see some of those guys stick over the years. Who are some of those guys that you think have the best opportunity to stick in terms of where they sign as an undrafted free agent? Because to me, I kind of look at D. Williams as a really intriguing special teams guy with these new special teams rules in the NFL.
I think that's a good one. And that's what you're always kind of looking for, right, with those type of guys is – some sort of niche skill or something that'll separate them. So I think D. Williams is a good one. I think that's a good point. McCallum Castles, I like his possibility of sticking. I don't know if it's necessarily in Philadelphia. I'm not sure that I love the fit there, but this is kind of like an H-back guy and someone that's pretty versatile in what it feels like he can do and is sneaky athletic for a guy that spent most of his college career at UC Davis. Those are probably the two I would point to, and you're right. I thought I had this weekend and leading up to the draft too, because I think there wasn't really any huge surprises. I found myself, you know, it felt last year like Tennessee went 8-4 and they very easily, from how good that team was standpoint, could have been worse. It kind of pointed that out to me again. I mean, I think what that 21 team that went 7-5 had five or six guys drafted, and obviously some of Tennessee's better players are back. James Pierce is possibly going to be number one overall pick next year, but it just, when you look at what went in the draft, and it kind of matched up my thought that from a talent standpoint, what Tennessee had last year wasn't overly impressive.
So are you saying that 8-4 should actually be something we celebrated last year?
No, it certainly shouldn't be anything you celebrate, but I think it maybe should be a little less surprising that it happened. And I'll go back to something that I said, like, not that it was a good season by any means, but all four games Tennessee lost ended up being pretty lopsided, and they beat Kentucky in a one-possession game, they beat A&M in a one-possession game. All the close games Tennessee played in last year, they won. Now, you could argue some of those games, the Alabama game was obviously very winnable at halftime, and maybe Missouri doesn't get away from them if the offense wasn't just so putrid in that game, and certainly Florida shouldn't have been a blowout, but overall, it just didn't feel like that Tennessee team last year was very good. So the end result to me wasn't necessarily all that surprising.
Yeah, I'm looking at one of the big sports books, and the line's already shifted. I'm kicking myself because on Thursday you could have gotten James Pierce, I believe, at 22-1 to be the number one pick next year. That's down to 12-1, giving him the fifth best odds to be the number one pick next year. If I set the over-under at 3.5 for his draft position, what's your way too early take there, over-under 3.5?
I'll take under, as any goes before. It just, outside of quarterbacks, like, I don't think there's going to be a better draft prospect than James Pierce. I mean, he's just so elite at rushing the passer, and he's versatile, too, when you look at an outside linebacker. I mean, obviously, I think a lot of people will point to the pick six against Iowa. The play that I will remember, however long James Pierce plays defense, that was the moment I said, holy crap, this guy is different, is the play at A&M in the fourth quarter. I guess Tennessee was up by 3 points. It was something like 3rd and 3 for A&M at the 35-yard line, and Pierce dropped into coverage and ran basically side to side on the field and you know, tackled a running back for a 2 or 3 yard loss and made that field goal a little bit longer, and A&M missed it, and Tennessee held on. That play was just a freak athletic play, and a play that showed me that James Pierce is more than a pass rusher. So with all that in mind, maybe the quarterbacks, all that, you know, balloons up. And I guess Travis Hunter would be another guy that would be kind of in the same class as the non-quarterback. But besides that, man, I think James Pierce is as good as anybody in the draft next year.
Tennessee might not have to wait very long for got to get called in next year's draft. And who knows, maybe Nico a top five pick the year after that. Ryan Schumpert, RockyTopInsider.com. Anything special you're working on this week?
Yeah, I'll have a Kavaris Tears feature out on Thursday morning.
Okay.
Before they open up the weekend series in Florida, just kind of looking at the latest edition of a Tennessee baseball player who was really talented, waited his turn, didn't transfer, and then it's had huge, huge results, a lot of stuff with him getting into shape and growing as an outfielder. He came to Tennessee without really a true position, and some good stories from that 22 year when he redshirted and learning from Jordan Beck, Trey Lipscomb, Drew Gilbert, those guys. So should be a fun one, and looking forward to being able to put that out later this week.
What day are we targeting for that? Thursday?
Thursday morning, yeah, before day. Yeah, they're making it, you know, hard on me. They're giving me a shorter time to get it out this week because I want to get it out before the series starts, and they'll open up things for a big series at Florida on Thursday night.
Now, will you be headed to Gainesville or no?
No, I'm holding it strong down in Knoxville this week, and we'll be down in Nashville next week for the Vanderbilt series.
Congrats to you. I wouldn't want you to have to travel down to Gainesville, so I'm happy for you. I'll be a little on the lookout for that on Thursday. Ryan, appreciate the time as always.
Of course. Appreciate you guys having me on.
Thank you, buddy.
RockyTopInsider.com. If you want to follow Ryan's work, R. Shump, is it 00 on X, I believe?
Yeah. Yeah, be on the lookout. His features, you know this, but for listeners, his features are great, too. He does a really nice job telling the stories. I'm looking forward to that one. I love Tears anyway. So
yeah, he's a great kid.
Yeah.
Someone should – what if Ryan's bosses should have given him a bonus or something just to change the X handle to like R. Shump RTI? The 00 throws me off. It's weird. One of his bosses should have forced that on him. I don't know.
Yeah,
it's tough.
Part of the negotiation.
Let's go to break. Good job by Ryan. We're up to speed on everything Tennessee-related. Talk some basketball coming up next. Stick with us. Hour number three is brought to you by Knoxville Smiles. Dr. Stephen Malone and his staff take pride in listening to and communicating with their patients to help them make the best decisions about their dental health. Don't put off your dental visits any longer. They can do it all at Knoxville Smiles for you, for routine cleanings to teeth removal. Invisalign, veneers, implants. Contact Knoxville Smiles today at 865-539-1776 to set up an appointment or take a virtual tour of their state-of-the-art West Knoxville facility at KnoxvilleSmiles.com. KnoxvilleSmiles.com. All right, let's kick off hour three with some winners and losers of the weekend. Sam, please hit the music.
Winners and losers of the weekend.
Bob, who won this weekend?
I'm just letting that music soak in for a second. It's good. Sam's good. Winners. Number three, I'll just be very quick on this. I actually felt Jalen Wright was a winner. We talked about that already, but I think that's a good landing spot for him. A speed merchant going to the most speed-dependent team in the league. I still firmly believe he's going to get run. Between Mostert and Achane, there's no way both of those guys stay healthy for a full season, and it may be debatable that Mostert even stays with the team. So good on Jalen Wright. Number two, MLB Players Association. They kept the heat on Fanatics, Nike, whoever you want to say, but this whole uniform redo decision is a victory, and for us as fans, we don't need to hear about it anymore, and I guess for a little while longer, we'll see the ripped uniforms and everything else. But better late than never. They got that worked out, and I'm sure Major League Baseball players will be forever grateful. My top winner of the weekend, it's the NFL, man. When it's like the NFL always wins. Record crowd at the draft in Detroit. Top-tier buzz as always. And then Roger Goodell swoops in and brings up talk of a longer regular season, going to 18 games, moving the Super Bowl to President's Day weekend. So if the Super Bowl's on Sunday, then a lot of people are off work on Monday.
How many people are actually off work for President's Day?
Well, it's a pretty fair amount. Well, and another not insignificant point is schools are out.
Okay.
So for parents that have younger kids and stuff, that's another thing they don't have to worry about.
Goodell, first it was the Nickelodeon game. Now he's after our kids to get them off school so they can stay up later to watch the Super Bowl and consume all the content.
Well, not to mention it's another shot to the bow at the NBA too, you know, because President's Day weekend's typically the NBA All-Star game. So, you know, he did it with Christmas Day games this year, which used to be the NBA's kind of exclusive territory. So, Goodell's feeling it. And then also, there's going to be more buzz ahead. We'll be talking about it soon because they'll be releasing the regular season schedules soon. And they turn that into kind of a tentpole event as well. It's just NBA or NFL, rather, is just, you know, just a year-round thing at this point. Which, as fans, we love that. But they are just an absolute battleship, man.
18 regular season games is sickening. Two bye weeks.
Yeah,
so you can
two byes.
You can extend it 2 weeks. I mean, it's. I'll watch it, of course. I love the NFL. I'll watch it. Just thinking about 9-9 records, though, just kind of makes me a little queasy.
I like the formalized. In order to do this, they would definitely cut it down to 2 preseason games. And
sure.
That I'm good with as well. I don't need to see much preseason football.
I'm sure they'd have to expand some rosters, too.
I'm kind of good with an even number season, honestly, again, John.
Well, yeah, no, I mean, if you're going to go to 17, you got to go to 18 because it's stupid right now that they rotate, you know, one team, one conference gets 8 home games versus 9, and they do that every other year. Like, you got to even it out. So, like, it's coming. It's coming. You know, I'm still going to complain about it, but then I'll fall in line. And
we need 500 football teams.
That's, yeah, you're right. I prefer they just stay at 16, but if they move to 18, that's 3 extra weeks of football. I get better at gambling on the NFL if this is going to happen. These extra 3 weeks are going to break me. I got to get a little bit better.
I love Goodell's quote, though, when they asked him about, you know, yeah, you're going head-to-head with if you move the Super Bowl to that weekend, you know, you're going head-to-head with the NBA again. He goes, I don't ask for permission for that. We just go where the fans are. It's like, it's what a boss does, man, when you got the best brand in the world.
Yeah, it's easy to have your chest puffed out whenever you are the commissioner of the best league in the world, or at least in America. I don't know if is the NFL more powerful than like the Premier League globally?
No, not
probably
globally.
Not.
Definitely not globally, I would say.
He did talk about, speaking about global, he did talk about that within the next decade he expects to have as many as like 16 or 18 games overseas in a regular season. Sounds like he's not that bullish at the moment or bearish on international expansion, because I know that's been talked about before, but definitely taking more games overseas.
I know soccer is obviously huge, but I just didn't know if La Liga and you know, the Bundesliga cut into the Premier League enough to kind of soften it up a little bit, because it's not like there's just one big league in Europe, yeah, or in the rest of the world. Like there's 3 or 4, whereas there's only one NFL. So I didn't know if the NFL was more powerful than the number one over there.
Maybe.
I don't know why I'm asking you, as if you're the professional, or like you're the soccer gatekeeper guy on soccer. Yeah, you don't know what the hell you're talking about either. Number 3, the third biggest winner of the weekend, I went with Zendaya, led challengers to number 1 in the box office. Only $15 million, so not like a huge opening, but anytime you can say you're number 1, that is a win, right? And now she can say that she led a number 1 movie in the box office without Spider-Man behind her, without Timothy Chalamet and Dune behind her. This was just her. And she was awesome in it, and she was selling herself as a sexy lady, and she succeeded there. So Zendaya, my third biggest winner of the weekend. And as far as I'm concerned, as far as our generation goes, Sam, or maybe my generation, she's top three in terms of movie stars.
I feel like Zendaya is more like my generation than your generation.
Well, I'm just talking about like right now. What I was really doing was trying not to act like we're the same age.
Okay.
Which, by the way, Zendaya is also like my age, so she's more of my generation.
Is she?
Yeah, she's like 32, 33.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah,
I thought she was like, I mean, she's 20s kind of.
She's a very beautiful woman, but she's in her
30s.
Yeah, she's in her 30s, so she's. I believe that's right. Maybe 27.
I don't know much.
Yeah, she might actually be only 27. So she's kind of in the middle. Either way, my point was the current generation, I think there are three movie stars, and she's one of them in terms of female leads.
Sure.
Who are your other two?
I'd go with, of course, Emma Stone, back-to-back Best Actress, and Florence Pugh. Now, I don't know if Florence can lead a movie yet. We haven't really seen her do that. Don't Worry, Darling. She kind of was the lead in because Harry Styles was the other guy, but that movie kind of didn't critically hit the way I think they thought it would. But I put her up there, too. Is there anybody you think I'm missing?
No.
Sydney Sweeney can, you know, carry a rom-com, but she doesn't have the acting chops, I don't think, to be considered here. Yeah. You get to the guys, there's different people. Yeah, Zendaya's 27.
Florence Pugh feels a little high, but I'm not sure who I'd swap her out with either.
Okay. I think she has the chops, and I think that, you know, her and I'm drawing a blank. Oppenheimer, you know, that kind of helped put her on a different level there.
Were we talking just age-wise?
Emily
Blunt's another one I would say is a pretty hot commodity at this point.
We'll see how Emily Blunt's movie does, another one that got the Oppenheimer rub. We'll see. She's got that movie with Ryan Gosling coming out, I believe, next weekend, Fall Guy.
Yes, correct.
We'll see how that one does. I anticipate that'll do pretty well in the box office because those are both A-listers coming off of the Barbie-Oppenheimer beef. So I'd imagine that one does pretty well. So, yeah, Emily Blunt's a little bit older. I was going more for the people like kind of in the early 30s to 20s. But, yeah, she deserves to be up there for sure. Number two, I went with Knicks fans. You have to be on top of the world right now if you're a Knicks fan. You have a really, really likable team. You are beating a team that is very unlikable right now. Joel Embiid has gone full wrestling hill and is just trying to hurt all your players. And you overtook, you know, the Wells Fargo arena too. You went down to Philadelphia and you punked their fans. It sounded like a neutral site game. Their fans were loud. You got Joel Embiid crying about the fans after the game and how he felt like, you know, the Philly fans let him down. You got a fun team, man. And you maybe have the best team in the East when it comes down to it, because the Celtics did what they do in game two, which is kind of falter in the playoffs and not look like they know what they're doing in crunch time. And you got a superstar in Jalen Brunson. I mean, I don't know if he's the best point guard in the league, but I think he's the toughest, and I think he's the one that you want on your side if you're a Knicks fan. If you're the Knicks, I don't think you would trade Jalen Brunson for any other point guard in the league right now. Not saying he's the best, but he's your guy, and that's a cool feeling. Number one, though, I went with a trio of players for different reasons. They had their big playoff moments. Jalen Brunson, superstar moment, 47 points, 10 assists, all-time leading scorer, or biggest game, I should say, in Knicks playoff history. I went with James Harden, big game James. The chips were down. Kawhi Leonard out, probably not coming back in this playoff series. James Harden, Paul George, both those guys known as kind of playoff chokers. But it was James Harden down the stretch in Dallas yesterday. Just kept making bucket after bucket after bucket. Maybe his best overall playoff game, at least in, you know, a handful of years. And number one, Anthony Edwards. He leads that charge. Star-making moment for him as he sweeps the Suns, gets them out of here. Sam, anybody we missed?
I had one on my list was draft day calls. I love watching the draft, but I also just love – the content that comes out after, when you just, you know, you get a good first round pick and it goes all the way down to the seventh round. Whenever
that's a good one.
You see some good emotion from guys that are making their dreams come true. I had Bernhard Langer as well. He's returning to the senior tour this week.
All right. Yeah.
He tore his Achilles 3 months ago and he's returning to professional golf.
It's a seniors tour. Is that really professional golf?
Dude,
yeah, you could still walk. Yeah.
You go tear your Achilles and walk 18 holes.
Well, I'm not saying he's not tough. After. Okay, first of all, hold on. Walk 18 holes? I thought the senior tour got to take carts.
No.
Senior tour, I'm going to take carts?
No.
I think you can maybe opt into it,
guy's not. That's like age discrimination, man. They walk.
You have to have like a disability to do that.
Yeah.
There's been like a whole law case on that.
Okay. For some reason, I thought they got to take the carts in senior tours.
I don't watch much senior tour golf, but if you're tearing your Achilles and coming back and doing anything athletic after 3 months.
No, that's pretty impressive. I didn't realize he tore his Achilles.
Okay. Loser of the weekend, Bob.
All right, number three. It's those Missouri baseball uniforms from Friday night. They look like a beer softball team, beer league team. Black pants, gold jersey, with no markings either. It was gross.
According to this quick Google search, you can use a cart in the senior tour. You guys always say something very emphatically. It says, yes, players on the senior tour can use carts. They can ride together with their caddy, till their caddy doesn't even have to walk. But,
how many players are using a cart?
I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know. I just know that's what everyone was talking about with Tiger. Like, when Tiger got to the senior tour, he would get to use a cart and stuff. He's kind of holding off.
Well, that I'd be in favor of. It's hard for me to watch him even walk now. He's got such a permanent gait that's been altered. Okay. So that was my number three. My number two was Kadarius Toney, who came in with such promise when he joined the Chiefs. And we know what happened to him this season. He was kind of the brunt of a lot of bad jokes about not being able to keep his feet from going over the line, et cetera, during games. And then between the Chiefs getting Marquise Brown and then drafting Xavier Worthy in the first round, it seems pretty clear. I mean, that's what they're saying. It's like there's a really good chance he doesn't even have a spot on that roster after this season. So a definite rebuild is in order for Kadarius Toney if he's going to stick in the NFL. My number one is NBA teams with signature talent / franchise players. The teams that are in the playoffs, the Suns, KD, Booker, Bradley Beal, they're out. The Bucks, Giannis and Dame, down 3-1 on their way out. Now, those are injuries, of course, but still. Sixers with Joel Embiid, down 3-1, likely out because of the way the Knicks are playing, like you said, John. The Lakers, LeBron and AD, down 3-1. Even if Jamal Murray has an injury that keeps him out of the next game, I don't see the Lakers winning that series. We're definitely, it feels like a changing of the guard. We've talked about Anthony Edwards. We've talked about Jalen Brunson. Halliburton, even though he was a little gimpy last night, still turned in a great game. Miles Turner's another good, pretty young player at this point. We're definitely seeing a changing of the guard in the NBA. Whether that sticks or not, who knows? But, boy, the marquee names are not sticking around right now. There's still a few out there still, of course, with Luka and Kyrie and PG-13 and Jason Tatum and others, but
and best player in the league, Nikola Jokic. Come on, Bob, give Jokic the rub.
I was getting there, but anyway. So some of these big kind of super teams that were built are not really making it work in the playoffs right now. That's my top loser.
Mine, right quick. Kind of already touched on number three, the Nashville Predators. Predator fans, I feel for you. But also, you just lost your soul. And that's worse than losing the games, is just losing your soul. People complaining about your game, your activities, your pregame stuff. You've lost everybody. Number two, Bob, did you see this? The A's play-by-play announcer, Jenny Kavner. Did you see this clip that went viral over the weekend?
I did not.
She sucks.
Did you see it, Sam, the clip that went viral?
There's been like 5 or 6 from this year already.
Yeah, this one's bad, and she's putting back the female play-by-play announcer as she has one of the all-time bad calls on a hard-hit double that gets over the right fielder's head. First, she says the ball is caught. Then she kind of just pauses and says, well, it gets by him, and then she says something along the lines of, and how about that? The game is evened up. As like an exciting like ninth-inning double that runners in second and third with no outs like in a tie game. Yeah, she got roasted for that one pretty good. That was
did you
tough,
see the
right?
Giants home run call?
I did not.
They had this
was it her or was it somebody else? Okay.
They had this autism awareness night and they had this kid. No, he was great.
Oh, okay.
He was awesome. So it wasn't a loser. It wasn't a loser.
Like Denzel and that, that gif.
They had this autism awareness night and like he was a local like high school broadcaster and they brought him into the booth and
so just a prodigy.
Yeah, and like Cedric Mullins hit a home run and he like took over the call from the broadcasters and they let him have it and like he did a great job with it.
Was that this past weekend?
Yeah.
I need to find it.
Yeah, it was
pretty cool.
See
if you can find it and send it to me.
Yeah, well.
And number one biggest loser of the weekend, the Suns. You went all in basically two seasons in a row, right? Or you've gone all in for Durant, then you went back and like, hey, let's trade all of our second round picks for Bradley Beal. Bradley Beal maybe deserves a special shout-out himself because he had the quote where he said, I've never been swept before. I'm not a loser. And then he came out and played one of the worst games in NBA history, at least from a guy that's supposed to be considered a star. Fouls out, slaps Frank Vogel's hand away, ends with 9 points on 4 of 13 shooting, a team worst, minus 12 all on the court. six turnovers, including some really bad ones in the fourth quarter. Bradley Beal maybe deserves a special shout-out, but the Suns in general, Matt Ishbia, all of them, losers, losers, losers.
Can I add something to that?
Go ahead.
I'm just reading this from Jonathan Givney or Givney, I don't know.
Givney, I think.
Givney. Okay, I didn't get it right at all. Suns mortgage away their entire future. Phoenix not only has zero control over their first-round picks from 2025 to 2030, but Bradley Beal also refused to waive his no-trade clause. He's owed $160 million over the next 3 years, has little trade value remaining. So really, unless they're going to break this up and look to make KD or Booker available in the offseason, they're stuck for sure.
They had the report, I think it was Wojnarowski, they had the report basically around Christmas that said Durant was frustrated with the Suns organization. I can't imagine that him being swept out of the first round for the second time in three seasons will make that frustration go away. So I wouldn't be surprised if Durant has a big market this season as he tries to kind of just get into a winning situation at the end of his career, because it's not going well for him between Brooklyn and Phoenix. Like, once he left Golden State, things have not gone well for him.
Yeah. Hey, last one, and this is maybe a winner, but, I think they said this is the last NFL draft that the Houston Texans have claimed draft picks from the Cleveland Browns and the Deshaun Watson deal.
That trade is final now.
I mean, it's unbelievable, too. I mean, there's a lot of through lines in helping them. Obviously, C.J. Stroud is not necessarily one of them, but Houston's built a really, really good team, and that's been a big contributor to it.
Kind of makes me sick. Not just as a Titans fan, because, I don't like the Texans, but, it kind of makes me sick. And maybe I have to go back on something I said in hour one where I said I believe in sports karma, because I feel like the Texans should not be reaping the benefits of the way they handled the Deshaun Watson situation, where they knew the allegations, they suspended him a year, and people even went back and was saying, hey, it's kind of weird timing that you release these allegations after he requests a trade. You stood by him until he requests a trade. Then all this stuff comes out, and, they had the lawyer that lived next to the owner, at least had a tie to the owner that was leading the charge against Deshaun Watson. It kind of makes me mad that they came out of this with a franchise quarterback and a bunch of good draft picks, because I don't think they handled it properly. Sam, any losers did we miss? Some hockey player, some baseball player, golfer you got for me?
Bowler.
It actually was funny. I did have it was from 6 days ago, but it was a junior hockey league. It was Kuwait and Thailand, and it was score was 57-0.
Never mind.
Dude, you really have problems.
Who won between Kuwait and Thailand?
Thailand won.
There's a good chance if that was on TV, you might have watched some
no,
of it.
No, I was not watching that, luckily, but it was an 18-year-old hockey tournament, and the shots were 122-1.
If you told me it was Russia versus Thailand or Kuwait, I would kind of know which side the score was going to be. But you tell me Thailand versus Kuwait, I assume Thailand won?
I think we got to watch out for Thailand hockey. They're on the rise.
They had to feel good. That's a stat booster there. That's a stat
booster.
For
the whole season.
Yeah. You get all of your season's worth of goals in one game. At least the individual players can say, hey, I scored 15 goals this season. Yeah. 9 of them came in the one period, but yeah.
That goalie save percentage is sunk for the next decade.
We'll talk some NBA playoffs coming up after the break. Stick with us.
So if you are into camping, there are only about 160 flawless campgrounds nationally, as considered by ratings from Good Sam. One of them is Two Rivers Landing RV Resort here in our backyard in Sevierville. So if you want to check it out and learn more about one of the great places in the country to go camping, check it out at tworiversrvresort.com.
I see that D1 Baseball released their top 25. Nothing changing in the top three, as A&M, Arkansas, and Tennessee stay unchanged to 1, 2, and 3. Have we seen any updates on Jamal Murray? I saw that he was dealing with a hamstring he's dealing with?
Yes.
It made me think that he would not go tonight in Game 5. there is a game five because the Lakers finally ended their losing streak to the Denver Nuggets on Saturday, ending that losing streak and now getting back to Denver, avoiding a sweep and, you know, giving themselves at least a puncher's chance to get the series back to L.A.
Yeah, to your question on Murray, I haven't seen any ruling for tonight. They might keep that close to the vest for as long as they can. But, yeah, Lakers, they took care of some business with their backs against the wall. They built a lead and this time didn't squander it. So, good sign for them. But, I it seems pretty much an impossibility that they're going to come back and win three of the last four. That'd be tough.
No. Four of the last four.
Well, yeah, that's true.
They'd have to win four of the last four.
True. Yeah. So, I mean, this would be tough for them. So,
I do think that the margin for error for the Nuggets is a lot lower this year than it has been. Just, I think, losing Bruce Brown, I've talked about. They feel like they're six good players deep. So, if you do remove their second-best player in Jamal Murray, I do think that becomes at least dangerous tonight. And LeBron and Anthony Davis have both been playing at a high level. I always see the graphic from 2016 of LeBron and Kyrie's Game 5 in Golden State when they kept the finals going where they both scored 41 points. Like, it would take probably that type of effort from these guys tonight in Game 5, but I'm at least giving them a puncher's chance. The point spread hasn't reflected Jamal Murray being out just yet. It started at 7.5. It's hung around there for most of the day. I believe now it's down to +7. So maybe some people thinking that they'll be a little precautious with Jamal Murray, which I do think they should. If I'm the Nuggets, like, yeah, I don't want to necessarily play with my food and give the Lakers a chance and start feeling that pressure, because if you went back to L.A. up 3-2, then, you know, you're one game away from a winner-take-all Game 7, and you don't want to go against LeBron James and Anthony Davis in a winner-take-all Game 7. But on that same hand, I don't want to let Jamal Murray re-aggravate or make his injury worse and then look like he's going to miss any time against Minnesota, because I think Minnesota is going to be a good matchup for Denver when you look at the size that they can throw at Jokic.
Yeah, agreed. I think that we've talked about this before, and we don't want to make it sound like he's the most critical piece of the puzzle for the Lakers, but again, it's not coincidental to me that the Lakers win that game and D'Angelo Russell delivered. But this whole up and down thing, they got to have that from him every single game at this point for them to have any sort of chance, and I still don't have a lot of confidence in that. But he played a great game Saturday night, and when you add that to LeBron and AD, that's a different team. And Austin Reeves, all those guys were hitting on all cylinders. So I guess if Murray doesn't play, I guess, is it Reggie Jackson maybe that gets more run?
Yeah, I'd imagine so. He's been kind of their backup point guard. You know, Jokic, of course, can run the point if he has to. But, yeah, you'd imagine Reggie Jackson's minutes go up the most, which, yeah, I don't really want to be relying on Reggie Jackson in 2024 in the playoffs. This series has felt closer the last 2 years. It doesn't feel like it's been lopsided enough where the Nuggets should have won 7 of the 8 games played. It feels like the Lakers have been right there in most of those games. I don't know if them winning gives them any type of confidence to actually get over the hump and make it a series, but at least they didn't get swept like Kevin Durant. I thought yesterday was awesome basketball. I thought 3 of the 4 games on Sunday were really, really, really good. You know, the Pacers and Bucks, it was entertaining, but, you know, as a Bucks team, that was a little overmatched. But I thought the other 3 games, starting off with the Knicks and 76ers, I thought that was a classic game. I thought Clippers-Mavericks was really, really good. And I thought the nightcap, despite it being a lopsided series and a sweep, I thought the Suns and Timberwolves played a high-level game.
Yeah, I'm with you. If I'm, Embiid spoke out about it on this Knicks 76ers game. Watching that game live, you could hear it on TV. It felt like Madison Square Garden South. I mean, there were a ton of Knicks fans there. How they got a hold of all those tickets is a little bit of commentary maybe on Philly fans. I don't know, but that game, and I'm as reticent as I am to say the Knicks are legitimate in terms of being a threat to get to the finals, I'm beginning to believe. yesterday was just a testimony to how tough they were. They lost Bogdanovich, you know, good reserve player for them. They lost him early.
Keep in mind they're also without Julius Randle, exactly. You know, an all-star type of a forward who has, I believe, made an All-NBA team in the last couple of years. Like,
right.
They're missing him even before the series started.
And then Isaiah Hartenstein fouls out pretty early yesterday, too. And, I mean, they just kept going. I mean, Jason Hart, we've talked about this before. He had, I think, 17 boards. 6'4 guy. They list him maybe 6'5", but, I mean, it just blows my mind watching that. They're tough.
Yeah, an all-time Josh Hart performance yesterday as he went 0-for-7 from the field, but still had a positive impact on the game because, like Bob said, 5 assists to go along with 17 rebounds, 5 offensive rebounds. And down the stretch, I mean, it was kind of a microcosm for the season and of the series. The Knicks just kept getting offensive rebound after offensive rebound and making big plays. I thought OG Anunoby did a really good job of guarding Joel Embiid. Joel Embiid ran out of gas. Like, if I'm Nick Nurse, I'm really kicking myself, and if I'm a Sixers fan, I'm really wondering what the hell Nick Nurse was doing, because you know Joel Embiid is hurt. You know he's also not ever really been somebody that gets you to the finish line in playoff games. He always kind of wears down. I don't understand how you go that game and play him all 24 minutes in the second half. I understand how important the game was. I understand you needed to win. You had to find some moments in the second half to rest him because he ran out of gas in that fourth quarter. Didn't have a field goal. I believe it was 0-for-5 in the fourth quarter. And your offense down the stretch was absolutely abysmal. As the Knicks were just tougher, just at every position. I had never seen a thing like what happened to Hartenstein. I don't think he actually fouled out, but he had 5 fouls in the third quarter.
That was it. Yeah. He just never came back in.
Yeah, because Precious Achiuwa was playing pretty well, and like that OG Precious combo was doing a good job of bothering Embiid. But yeah, like he had 0 fouls at half, and then Bob had 5 fouls in the third quarter as he just could not stop fouling Embiid.
Yeah.
But Jalen Brunson got them to the finish line, and it wasn't even a game where they really shot well from three. Dante hit a couple big threes in the fourth quarter. But as a whole, the Knicks shot 7 of 27, 26%. And if you're the Sixers and you lose that game at home to a team that shot 26% from three, it really just comes down to toughness. And you could take James Harden off the team, and you can't scapegoat him or Doc Rivers anymore. Eventually, you just got to look back at the guy that's been there the entire time. Ben Simmons ain't there to blame anymore. Doc Rivers ain't there. James Harden ain't there. But you know who still is? Joel Embiid.
True.
And at a certain point, you run out of people to scapegoat. And I think that's that. I think now is the time for the 76ers.
I agree. I was looking at Brunson's line again, too. And I mean, because it felt like obviously everything flowed through him for the Knicks. And as much as he handled the ball, as many shots as he took and made, he had one turnover the whole game. I mean, you look at some of the other lines for players, you know, Kyrie, Harden, some of the other ones, you know, they're NBA players, so the turnover numbers typically are less, but, I mean, that's an efficient game by all stretches. I mean, that's amazing.
Well, especially when you ramp up and talk about, you know, postseason pressure.
Yeah.
And just the defense is the half-court style. I told you Bradley Beal, I think, had, what, 6 turnovers last night?
Yeah, exactly.
Jalen Brunson has 11 through the first 4 games in this series, and he's someone who has the ball the entire time.
Yeah.
Just having double teams ran at him. No, I never thought he would be as good as he is. Obviously, Dallas didn't either when they let him go. They could have had him for a bargain. And I know Kyrie's been good, but can't help but think about it. Had they just kept Brunson and Luka together and their draft picks and their cap space, what kind of team they could have built around them. But the Knicks, of course, kind of got made fun of for giving him, I think it was a 4-year, $120 million contract. And now that's viewed as one of the best bargains in the league because he is a legitimate superstar. And like I said, if you're drafting point guards, I don't know if he's the best, but he's the toughest. And he's the one that would be the easiest to root for and the funnest to root for if you're a Knicks fan. Sam, did you find yourself caught up in these storylines at all this weekend? Have you given up on the NBA playoffs or are you still in?
No, I'm still in. I think I'm only in on like a couple series, but I am.
That's completely fair.
I'm in on Knicks and Sixers for sure, and then I had a lot of fun watching that Timberwolves Sun series, even though that was a sweep. And yeah, I mean, I think Clippers Mavs has been electric too. So I've been all in. Bucks and Pacers is one that I haven't really followed. Sorry, Bob. And then Celtics and Heat and Thunder and Pelicans, that hasn't really done much to me as well.
Yeah, Celtics got bored in Game 2 and they came out and choked out Miami in Game 3. I imagine they'll choke them out in Game 4 and win that series in 5.
Yesterday was fun.
Orlando-Cleveland has been ugly. Like I told you, it's going to be 7 blowout games. Like, I think that's how it's going to go. Now, you could tell me that maybe Orlando actually steals Game 5 and wins that in 6, and I wouldn't be shocked, but like it feels like that one's just going to be 7 blowouts.
Their defense is crazy.
They are. Yeah, I mean, like, they got length and all over, and it helps whenever they actually hit some shots. But I thought the Magic were better than the Cavs, so I was a little embarrassed at that take after the first two games. But you kind of saw it in games 3 and 4 that I do think they're overall better, just whether or not they can win a game on the road. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I mean, I thought the gaslighting coming out of that Suns-Timberwolves series has been crazy. Like, you're seeing sports gaslighting at its finest. Like, everyone's just like, man, the Timberwolves are just such a bad matchup for the Suns. They're too big. When literally everyone was pointing to the opposite before the series, like about how bad of a matchup that was for Minnesota because the Suns had swept them in the regular season and had blown them out in every game. And, you know, I did the same thing. I'm not pointing fingers at people. Like, you just thought, like, hey, those scores are too good. Those scores are too good. And then it was the exact opposite when it actually got to a playoff series where just the Timberwolves are just too big. Towns and Gobert and Reed were just bigger and better than every one of the Suns' big men. And Bradley Beal's just not that guy. And Booker wasn't superhero other than last night. He was really, really good in Game 4, but I thought Booker was kind of disappointing in the playoffs. But, yeah, everyone came out of that series like, man, just a really bad matchup for Phoenix after everyone said the exact opposite just like a week and a half before.
Yeah. I loved the quote I think I heard Edwards say on Scott Van Pelt of after Game 3 said something to the effect of, I want to kill everything in my sight. You know, I mean, he's
just light them up, he said. I'm going to kill everyone in front of me. And he was hitting them with the DX suck it sign. I don't know if you guys saw that.
I did. Yeah. I saw that.
And then after the game, they're asking, well, I was trying to get Rudy to do it too because, you know, Rudy just had a big N1. He's like, I was trying to get Rudy to do it, but he wouldn't look at me. And like, you
I
know,
love Ant.
Yeah, no, Ant's the man. And, you know, I've been beating the drum for the last 2 years that he's the future face of the league when it comes to American basketball players. And you kind of see that taking shape now. And I don't know if he's going to be able to always be lovable Ant because I feel like he's just going to leave a wake of bodies behind him and fan bases that are going to, like, hate him. Because if you're a Suns fan, you kind of got to come out of that series hating him, right? Like, just that the way he rubbed your nose in it is really exciting, and it was kind of emphatic, and it was crazy. There was still, like, 2.5 minutes left in the game, but it went to a timeout after it. But after his dunk over Kevin Durant that put them up 4, everyone on the internet was like, yep, that's the end of the Suns. Ant just killed them. And there was still 2.5 minutes left. It was a 4-point game, but it ended up being the case that he just killed them with that dunk. But I just don't know if he's going to be able to be loved by everybody just because he's going to leave a wake of bodies of people hating him.
I was seeing on social media, everyone's just like, this is just the next, like, you know, Kobe, where it's just like he's the next guy in basketball that has that actual killer mentality, because we haven't had that in a while, it seems like.
And maybe you just have to tip your hat to it. Maybe the Suns like, hey, you know, we tip our hat, he's the man. But, like, I just think that, like, those series create rivalries. And, like, Denver's up next. I imagine he's going to give it to Denver. But, yeah, maybe it's just the respect thing. Like, hey, we'll hate you sports-wise, but you're actually really cool. Because Kobe kind of had that too. Now, Kobe had the more stuff off the court and really just personality-wise that made him a little bit easier to dislike, whereas Ant seems to check all the boxes you want from your athletes.
Yeah.
Funny, a killer competitive, and clutch. Because, like, the Suns played a really good game last night, but they just couldn't stop him. And he was just having his way with them. Just big shot after big shot.
I saw a tweet from Dan Orlovsky that said, how in the world did Anthony Edwards go play at Georgia for a year? It's like, it's true. I mean,
the same way he's going to come home to the Atlanta Hawks in a couple years. Yeah. He just loves Georgia. I'm counting down the days, Bob. Get my boy Ant in a Hawks jersey. Come on.
That would be a game changer for sure.
Just force your way home. That's the only way he's going to get there. That's the only way that the Timberwolves are ever going to let him go. And I guess on one hand, if you're a Wolves fan, you'd be a little terrified of, like, losing your star player, you know, to a bigger market. But on the other hand, Ant seems like the type of guy that might just take it personally and want to carry a team to a championship there. Mm-hmm. Just the little knife twists by him are so good, too. Even after the game, him and Cat are up there looking. He's like, looking at the box score. He's like, wait, Eubanks didn't play? He's like, man, he was really good for them. And Cat's like, yeah, that's not our problem. Like, just kind of twisting the knife. Like, hey, this team needed big men, and they actually didn't play the guy that was playing best for them. They played sorry-ass Nurkic instead of Eubanks. One of my favorite things coming out of the basketball weekend was just a tweet. It was a tweet about Bradley Beal, and it's so true. It just points out Bradley Beal is owed $56 million next year, and said if it was the NFL, they'd hire a hitman, because there's no way the NFL would let him get that much money for that type of production. Some team would just get him touched and wiped out.
I saw a stat. Nurkic is 3-17 in the playoffs.
Nurkic sucks. Nurkic is your typical big man that can put up good numbers, get your points and rebounds, but you can't win with him in the playoffs. Like, it doesn't help that he was on that Blazers team that couldn't play defense, but at the same time, Sam, they couldn't play defense because of him. He's just big. You get him out switched on pick and rolls, and like that's what Minnesota kept doing down the stretch. They just find whoever wherever he was at, bring him up, and you know, eventually they took him off the court and just would, you know, Ant was doing it to everybody, but just hunt him on pick and rolls. Nurkic can't defend. He's not fast enough. He's not good enough offensively to make a difference. He's basically Enes Kanter. I don't know if you remember Enes Kanter way he would get abused in pick and rolls. That's who Nurkic is.
Hey, real quick, to put a bow on NBA, are the Clippers play better right now without Kawhi in there?
1,000%.
Yeah.
1,000%. And, you know, I don't think that's the case, obviously, when Kawhi is healthy, but the 80% version of Kawhi they've had, like, I don't think it's a coincidence that they are 2-0 without him. Or, yeah, 2-0 without him and 0-2 with him.
Yeah.
Like, I think he slows them down, and I don't think he is at the level of health where he can actually be that elite defender and elite perimeter player, so the Clippers are better suited to play fast and just kind of let James Harden try to pick people apart. And like, yesterday was a little bit of an anomaly. You know, that Clippers-Mavericks game was really, really fun. The Mavericks, I think, got down, what, 30?
31.
Yeah. 31, yeah. Down 31 because Paul George just hitting every shot, and Paul George went absolutely in fuego.
Playoff P.
But then the Mavericks come all the way back, get a one-point lead. But then James Harden and Paul George made big play after big play. Paul George wasn't great in the second half, but he hit one of those fadeaway threes behind the basket, basically.
Yeah.
And then James Harden just hit floater after floater and made big play after big play. Luka, I don't know if Luka's right, because he doesn't look like he is healthy. He doesn't look explosive enough, and he said it himself kind of. He's like, I feel like I'm letting Kyrie down, because Kyrie was awesome yesterday.
When I was watching, I thought he was looking like he was like limping or something.
Yeah.
But also, he just doesn't look like he tries sometimes when he's running.
He's got a little bit of that Joel Embiid in him. I don't know if you were watching any of the Knicks game, but like the moment the Knicks started taking the lead, all of a sudden Embiid starts, you know, nursing that injury a little bit and starts limping a little bit. Like, he's very bad at the body language. And Luka kind of has that too a little bit, but also like they're both just kind of out of shape. But I do think Luka's tweaked his knee or something. I don't think he's 100%.
Yeah.
Same as Joel Embiid's not 100%. But Embiid scores 50 points and rubs your nose in it. But the moment like things get going tough in Philadelphia, he starts limping around and starts holding his leg and everything.
Luka loves the sweet tea. That's what I've always heard.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. He likes sweets. He likes the sweets. But, you know, 1 of 9 from 3 for him yesterday, that's kind of the reason they lost. And the Mavericks are still favored to win that series, but they're going to have to win in L.A. And you know, the Clippers look good without Kawhi. I was happy for Steve Ballmer. He was sitting there, and in the first half, he's living it. You know, he's living life. He was so happy. And then second half, he's just, like, pulling his face off, just so nervous. And they're able to get to the finish line. Is that the only 2-2 series we have?
Yeah.
Assuming that the Boston Celtics take care of business tonight, yeah, that'll be the only 2-2 series we have. That's a fun one.
It is. And, I mean, you would. I guess that's what you'd expect from a 4-5 matchup, right?
The other 4-5 matchups, 2-2 as well, Cleveland and Orlando.
Oh, yeah.
So both of them.
We had to bring that up, didn't we?
I've kind of enjoyed that from a sicko perspective, but we'll see what happens in that game 5. But, the Clippers and Mavericks is going to be pretty fun.
I said last thing earlier. One more last thing. Milwaukee, do you think they
– P.S.
Do they roll out – I if I'm them, I don't put Giannis out there at this point. I'm not just saying that as a Pacers fan. I think it's foolish for them to do it.
I don't put Giannis or Dame out there. Yeah. I just take my L.
Yeah.
Feels like a free excuse for them.
It does. But, like, Giannis isn't going to necessarily care about that because Dame isn't young.
Yeah.
Like, that's a wasted year. And like,
how many, when they traded for him, like, is he a free agent after this year?
No, he's not a free agent. He's got a couple years left, but like, that would be the, you know, add him to the list of names of like stars that might get traded. Cause if I'm the Suns, I'm doing something. I'm probably trying to trade Kevin Durant. And if I'm the Bucks, I wouldn't necessarily hate just moving on from Dame because that experiment didn't work.
I'll tip my hat to Middleton though, man. Dude is busting his ass out there. You know, that's all they got right now. I guess Lopez too, but that's about it.
In my head, there's a trade that makes sense, just like Phoenix and the Clippers, just like Durant for Kawhi. Like, there'd have to be some draft pick compensation, but kind of just take care of both teams' problems. Like, because the Kawhi, you got to get somebody you can trust in the playoffs.
Yeah.
And if you're Phoenix, Durant thing's probably a failure, so maybe just try to get Kawhi. It seems like he would fit better. You need a guy that can actually defend. I don't know. Yeah, Dame's got a couple years left on his deal.
Can we find a way to get KD back to OKC?
Yeah.
I want to see a reunion there.
Like the Thunder are the one seed, but the Thunder also are equipped to like go out and get a star. They have a bunch of, you know, extra draft picks. Mm-hmm. So like, yeah.
And
like,
the Suns like don't have any draft picks for years, right?
No, yeah, for sure. Like, yeah, I mean that could happen. Paul George could end back up in Indiana. Like, there's a chance to just get a couple reunions.
Mm-hmm. Give me a reunion.
Spurs, maybe just call Kawhi. Like, hey, come on home, Kawhi.
Hell yeah.
Grass ain't always greener, is it, huh, buddy?
And Anthony Edwards
to Atlanta. You know, he hasn't played for the Hawks yet, but yeah, just Anthony Edwards. Just homesick. Last call on the other side.